It's Monday, September 11th, 2006, and you're listening to episode 18 of Fear the Booth, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 3 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Booth. This is Dan, and today we've got Chad.
Howdy.
And Dawn.
Hello.
John is still in Rome, and Adam is out of town on a trip somewhere with Melina. So we'll be praying for him. In his absence, we want to ask a question real quick. Before the show, we were sitting around talking about FASA's Doctor Who role-playing game, maybe back like 1985. Yeah.
I saw it in the catalogs. Actually, you know what? Now that I think about it, on a tangent here, FASA Catalog was the best piece of marketing in the world.
I love FASA Catalogs.
They were as good as the games themselves.
I was disappointed when a game box set of theirs did not include one of their catalogs.
I don't think I've ever had one that didn't.
I don't think I have either.
Yeah. So how could you be disappointed?
They were great, though. They were so, so much art and color. Yeah. And it wasn't just like, here's a picture of a book. Here's a picture of a book. Here's
you
a
know
picture
what?
Of a book.
I have a box set that I got off eBay. And this sometimes happens when you order strange things off eBay.
Do you know what's wrong here?
What's that?
We are huge fans of a company that no longer exists. If we were this dedicated to a company that still existed,
this would be Fear the FASA.
Yeah, well, we would have a corporate paying gig by now. They'd be paying us $1,000 an episode to do this.
But you know what? We can pimp them and we don't feel like we're selling out.
That's true.
Because they don't exist.
We can't be bought off because they're bankrupt.
Pretty much. So anyway,
we won't take your point of view for food stamps.
Youch.
Sting. All right, so fast
anyway.
It's getting cold over here.
Anyway, we're talking about catalogs and how they're really great marketing. Actually, we're talking about Doctor Who. But anyway, catalogs. And I got this box set from eBay of some BattleTech product. Actually, it was Star Trek the role-playing game from FASA. Mm-hmm. And I opened it up, and lo and behold, inside are all the Star Trek stuff that I ordered, and the Lord of the Rings game from the 80s by Not FASA. I don't know who it was by.
Okay.
And then, under that, was a catalog for the same people. And these were the people who wrote Twilight 2000 and several other games. And I'm flipping through this catalog. I'm like, what is this junk? And I'm like, flipping through. I'm like, ooh, wow. I'm going to have to spend some money on eBay now. Ooh, wow. And it's like, why don't more games come with catalogs? They're sold in books, so I guess it's hard to put a book within a book. But
they're sold in books is the biggest thing that I think causes that. I mean, think about it, really. You walk through a role-playing store now, there aren't that many box sets in general.
No, they're not.
It's mostly just hardbound
books.
Unless
it's a board game of some sort, but yeah.
Yeah, so I guess that's part of it. Yeah, and I think most of the game books I have, though, do have like a one-page ad with a list of their
different.
Books or something.
When I'm flipping through that, my mentality of it is like, oh, God, they stuck that in the book. But when it's a catalog,
it's
that's
fun
like
to
more
look at.
Pages and more annoying. I'm like, oh, wow.
And I used to, with the fastest stuff, of course, no secret here, we're big BattleTech fans. No. I used to love it because...
Yeah, it's on your number two list.
I know. They didn't just have like... pictures of the books, like I was saying. They'd have like these huge splash pictures of like Warhammer breaking through a map of the Inner Sphere, or, you know, all these different mech piles. There's cool stuff to look at in there. And of course, all this really has, this is a huge tangent. So the Doctor Who role-playing game by FASA.
Yes.
We were talking about this before the show. Now, Chad is a huge Doctor Who fan.
And for those interested, my favorite doctor is John Pertwee, but that's beside the point.
Now, Dawn and I, or not so much Doctor Who.
Never really watched it. I was terrified when I saw it as a child, and it kind of chased me off.
I'm slightly different both than Dawn. I just never watched it.
You never
it,
got
period.
Into it, yeah.
I never watched it and hated it. I just never really turned it on.
Right.
The only BBC sci-fi show I watched all the time was Blake 7.
Oh, Blake 7 was really cool, too, with those hairdryer guns.
I still believe to this day a flashlight can kill a man.
That's right.
But we were wondering... if this, because we found the Doctor Who role-playing game on eBay.
Right.
And we were going to buy it.
Like the original FASA one that was, it was all sealed up, mint condition, all that, is about $40. The question we have.
Is this worth buying?
Is this worth $40? Not the collector's value of it. Is it worth buying? Was this a good game? I've never seen the game.
So if there's anyone who listens to this show who has played the FASA Doctor Who role-playing game and could send us an email or hop on our forums, feartheboot.com, and just tell us what it was like. Mm-hmm. Do a review for us and tell us whether it was any good or not. We'd like to know.
Even if it was like not a fun game to play, but a really cool game to have if you're a Doctor Who fan, I would still buy it because I'm a big Doctor Who fan. But if it's bad on both counts, yeah, I'd like to know before I spend the money. But if it's good on both counts, I really want to know.
Right. So we can go get it, but we just don't know. All right. So moving on from that, about two podcasts ago, we kicked off a contest that we're doing with geeklabel.com, which is a, as we keep saying, a purveyor of kind of geek-related shirts and other stuff. And the contest was based on our commentary on freak show characters, mm-hmm. or people that play characters that do not conform to the standard list of races and classes that are intended to be played. That instead of playing a human fighter, you want to go play Noel Dragon Wizard or something. Mm-hmm. And we asked people to hop on our forums and to send us their best freak show characters. Characters that were strange in concept, but were still deep, solid, interesting, mm-hmm. balanced characters. And we got a whole bunch of entries.
Yep.
And I first want to thank all of you that entered.
Yes.
We had a lot of fun doing this.
Very interesting read. Yeah,
thank you all.
And we saw a lot of good stuff in there. When we went to pick the winner, there was a couple that we were kind of wrangling between. Yeah.
It was not just one clear winner. We were debating amongst, like, I think there were three finalists.
Let's give the winner, and maybe kind of sprinkled throughout here, we'll give a few honorable mentions.
Okay.
So, Chad, why don't you...
Well, Dan, how about you read it? Because we just did a take of this show. We got about 15 minutes in, and we trashed it. It wasn't any good. If you listen to our bonus episode, you hear the whole story. Dan, why don't you read it? Because when I read it the first time, I don't think that I gave it any justice.
All right. Let me see this one. Okay. So this entry, the winning entry, comes from a guy whose handle on our forums is Judas. So if you want to hop our forums and read his full entry, feel free to do so. I am not going to verbatim read his entry because...
We want you to come to the forums.
Also, this would get pretty dry.
Right.
So, but real quick, let's talk about what the character is. His entry is a character named Drax, who is a clay golem that was created by a gnomish wizard. So we definitely mm-hmm. have the freak show going on here. Clay golem is not a human elf, whatever. Right. And the way that he wrote the character, there's a couple things we were looking for in a good freak show character. The biggest thing we were looking for is a character that had depth that was not created purely for glitter or for power. That's not to say it can't be powerful, but we just can't get the sense that created a character just because he's powerful. And one of the things he did with this character was he played up both the problems of a golem as well as the upsides of a golem. That this creature was basically mindless. That the wizard that created him set him on this patrol path to wander his lair, mm-hmm. and then got killed. And so this golem is a golem, just keeps doing what he's always done, just keeps wandering around. Mm-hmm. But eventually, over many ages or many years or whatever, slowly starts to kind of evolve his own consciousness, starts to wake up, at which point he's still this big, lumbering, largely mindless creature that starts investigating his world. And this wizard had this tower full of nothing but dry magical texts mm-hmm. and romance novels. And it's from this...
Cheesy
romance novels, like bodice ripper type things. And it's from this that this golem develops his understanding of the world.
Yes.
And decides that he can go on this great big romantic quest about the world to find the right magical reagents to bring his master back from the dead. And the Judas even writes in this that this won't work.
Right.
This is impossible.
It's a tragic, sad tale. And we really liked that about it. We really liked how this wasn't a superpowered character because, I mean, granted, it was a golem, but even he said it was like this guy was, sure, he was strong, but he was slow and lumbering and he didn't have much intelligence. And about how it wasn't just overpowered or happy or just whatever. It was a sad tale. And it was interesting. It made for a really interesting, intriguing character.
I also like the fact that he stayed faithful to a golem's personality mm-hmm. without jumping to what we said was the other big problem with freak show characters, which is people that destroy originality. That my template, well, what are you? Well, I'm a gnoll shaman. Oh, really? What's your personality? and they just kind of recite.
Yeah, they do Knoll things.
They recite the entry for Knoll in the Monstrous Manual. And I like
the it's the other extreme where it's just a man in a golem body.
Yeah.
You know, he...
And had this entry been something like a guy died and transferred his mind to a golem, this would smack of what to me would be a bad friction
character.
Yeah, I
mean, if this character was played right, I mean, I think it would be really fun to interact with, you know, as another player character.
Yeah.
Good job, Judas. Now, real quick, we are going to give a few honorable mentions because I said we would. Mm-hmm. And I want to bring out some of the points in them that I thought made them interesting rights. And I apologize, we're not going to get to all of them, so just... bear with me. If you weren't mentioned, it doesn't mean we hated your character. I said, we got a lot of good entries.
Well, maybe Adam hated your character.
Yeah, Adam hated your character.
So
that's
why he's not here today. He was so full of hatred.
Yeah.
He could not
come. Send all your hate mail and
furry porn
to Adam at FearTheBoot.com.
Right. Yeah. Now, one of the entries I really liked was a guy sent us one for a Formian worker. Now, for those of you who don't know what a Formian worker is, in D&D, in some of the Monstrous Manuals, there is a race of, like, ant people that follow very much an ant hive. They have queens and drones and workers and such. And there was one section in particular about his write-up that just made me fall in love with the character, which is his hive gets wiped out. And so not knowing what else to do, because he's just an ant in this ant hive, he goes wandering off. And he finds a house. Mm-hmm. Or what may have been a bank, or I'm not sure what, but sitting there was this box and all of this money. Now, of course, a typical adventurer's, I pocket this money and buy a magical sword and go on adventures. And no, he's an ant worker. What does he do? He takes out all the money. He starts stacking it. Silver coins over here, copper coins over here, stacks of all equal height, old coins on bottom, new coins on top. And it's like, that was perfect.
Yeah.
Because
so neat.
You are sticking to, you're kind of drawing out just the natural absurdities of this Formian worker in a human society. And you did not, it was not turned into a human in an ant's body, nor was it turned into this dry, well, he was an ant man and joined a party and became an ant man party member. And it was, I love the originality with that, yet the faithfulness to what a Formian worker is. Another one we got that was really good was a guy who sent us in one about a kind of reverse Pinocchio story, where there was a guy who had been assigned to bodyguard a child. Wizard comes in to assassinate or kidnap this child or whatever and nails this guy with a spell, turning him or cursing him to become a marionette. The guy is so shocked by the whole thing that he kind of goes catatonic and just sits there. And so now the kid's gone. They throw out all of his toys and they throw this marionette out with it. And he ends up in a used toy store where he's picked up by another child who imagines that his marionette is actually this noble warrior who slays dragons and does all these impressive things, except it's actually true. This really is a noble warrior who slays dragons and all this stuff. And so you're now kind of left with this kid waffling probably between realities that no one's going to believe. So once again, big thanks to everyone that entered. And
Good job, everybody.
Our winner. Yeah. We are going to look up your email address on our forum, and we'll get in touch with you to get you your coupon code for Geek Label.
Yeah, so, Judas, if you gave us a fake email address, make sure you correct it.
Now, also, we're not going to do it this week. We're going to take a week or two off.
Yep.
But we are going to come back. We have three more of these codes to give away.
Mm-hmm.
So we are going to come back.
As well as some other merchandise to give away, too.
Yeah.
We have a lot of contest lineup. We just don't want to
bombard you guys. So
yeah, we want the contest to be special, not the norm.
So we're going to take a week or two off, but we're going to come back pretty soon, and we're going to kick off another contest for another one of these codes. So if you didn't win, everyone's free to re-enter and try their hand again. You know, we'll see how it goes from there. Great entries. Thanks, everyone, for doing it.
Thank you.
Now, changing subjects, this past week, and I'm going to try to get this up on our site, at least via link, I was involved in a phone interview
with the president.
With the president of Namibia.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
No.
Isn't he in jail?
But I was contacted by the guys over at Fistful of Comics, which is another podcast, to join them on an interview with the guys from Upper Deck that are making the World of Warcraft trading card game.
Right.
I'm going to try to get a link for that interview up on our site, so stop by there at some point and look for it. I'm probably not going to put the podcast into our rotation just to avoid confusing people, but I will get a link up to it. But that kind of got us thinking that we talk a lot about gaming. We've never really talked about card games.
Right. And we've mm-hmm. played CCGs and yeah. card games, too.
Well, let's start by giving our street cred on CCGs.
Oh, and God.
Then we'll talk about our take on them. Now, for me, CCGs have never been as big as role-playing games.
Uno for life.
Or Uno. Strategy games like Warhammer.
Right.
I did play Magic.
We dabbled.
Yeah, we dabbled in Magic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Take that any way you want. We dabbled in Magic. I owned maybe four, maybe half a dozen starter decks.
Yeah. I played, when I got into Magic, it had just come out, right? And CCGs had been out before that. There was a comedy one. It was a government satire. Oh, my mind keeps wanting me to say it's Paranoia, but that's obviously not it. Illuminati.
It was Illuminati.
It was Illuminati, yeah.
Yeah.
I had never played that. But anyway, I had played Magic when it first came out. I knew a guy who owned a comic shop, and I walked in, and he's like, hey, and he's playing with a guy. He's like, hey, dude, you want to play? And
yeah,
I'm like,
that's the same time I picked it up.
I'm like, yeah, sure. And then I bought a starter deck, and then I bought a couple of the boosters. I'm like, wow, this is fun. And then I heard, oh, wow. There's another series coming out, or another booster set coming out. And so I went and I bought up a whole bunch of those boosters, and I got some pretty powerful cards too. And I'm like, wow, this is really cool. And then another one came out like a month later after that.
Hold that thought, because we'll talk about the ups and downs here. But you played Magic, Dawn.
Yeah.
You said
I played Magic. That's pretty much the only game I ever really got into. That was it.
Okay. Just play Magic?
All right. Now, Chad, you and I also play, though you got into it more than I did, the Aliens versus Predator
Which was wonderful.
It was a neat game.
It was great.
Three sides that all played very distinctly, and the way it worked was you would put down a room, like in a spaceship or
facility. Yeah, it was like a space station type thing, a colony.
I could put down
A corridor,
and my guys are in the corridor. Yeah. I can put down a galley next to the corridor.
Yeah, and then on my turn,
Chad puts down a galley of his own. That's now the same galley.
It's now the same galley. So, and then you could connect them in a big circle or a square, and you could make this big interconnected space station. And it's like you would do things, too. It's like his guys would be running down a corridor, and he would lay down a corridor and run into it, and I'd be like, oh, no, no, no. And then I would lay down a locked airlock. And then he would be playing Space Marines, and he would pull out, he would have his Marines out, and they'd have the different gear, and he would pull out the arc welder. And he's like, okay, I'm cutting through this door. And then I'm like trying to maneuver guys around, and then he puts down, he's like, oh, I need some guns, and he's going through his deck, and he puts down an armory. And then he runs his guys to the armory.
And they all come out with machine guns.
It was
a neat game.
Yeah. And they had the alien concepts of those, and they
now,
had the Predator.
Didn't you also play the Star Wars?
I played the...
Still has tons of Star Wars cards.
What was the... Decipher or Cypher?
I think it was Decipher.
Decipher? It was the Decipher Star Wars, which was the old company that made the game, which was really good. The new company, not so much. That one was really cool, too, because you could play a space battle with big ships and the Death Star and cruisers and fighters and pilots in the fighters, cruisers carrying fighters and stuff, and the fighter and the cruisers fighting against each other. You can put down planets, and then you could do landings on the planets, and then you could put down tanks, well, the Star Wars version of tanks, the AT-ATs and AT-STs, and then the rebel troops and stuff, and the troops, the soldiers. And you could even go, do the Death Star. You can build a Death Star. You just didn't put down a Death Star card. You can, build a Death Star. And then the other guy can lay down a trench run and stuff. And it was really cool. And then they had the characters, of course, and all the action cards and whatnot. It was really, really neat.
I think if I was to talk about what I like and didn't like in card games in general, I could really put both of the things under one great big umbrella, which is economy. For example, the reason I liked Aliens vs. Predator was partially because of the fact that I thought it had a really, really neat game concept, that it was very balanced and interesting and fun to play. But I could say about a lot of games, I thought Magic was a lot of fun to play.
Right. Yeah.
But what drove me away from Magic, and we talk about this in the bonus episode we're releasing later this week, the game, rather than moving forward, moved upward. That what they did to keep you coming back to milk that cash cow was... Every expansion had more powerful cards and bigger and badder cards.
Bizarre cards.
Yeah, and if you wanted to stay abreast, you had to keep buying.
Yeah, it's how you beat your opponent was not necessarily through strategy.
Outspending
them. Yeah, throwing money at the game.
And I didn't like that because I can go...
we didn't like it because we had part-time jobs. We were kids. We didn't have any money.
Well, and, you know, even today...
Even today, I wouldn't do it.
I do have money, you know, I could take... If my house, God forbid, was to burn to the ground at night, I could take $100 to a gaming store. With that $100, I could buy sufficient books and dice and everything to get together a complete role-playing game and sit down, and we could play, I mean, a nearly infinite number of games.
In not that you'd
ashes
really want
of your house.
You'd really want to game.
But did the kitchen table survive? Who cares? Clear out a place for gaming.
Is there still a refrigerator?
You people do not understand how hardcore we are.
But if you sent me to a card store with $100, I could blow the whole thing on a bunch of starter decks and have a game. One game, okay, that's all I can play with it, is one game over and over and over and over and over again. And the minute a new expansion comes out, I can't win anymore.
But, on the other hand, if you are a fan of a card game that's out of business, you can get on eBay, spend $100 and get every single card that they ever made.
They're competitive games, so if nobody else is playing, why bother?
Yeah, that's the thing. The Aliens Predator game was a huge amount of fun, and Tim, one of the guys from the earlier episodes, he and I played it all the time. We were the only people we could find who would play it, and we were the only people in St. Louis buying the cards. and it sucked. I mean, we had a lot of fun playing it, but it got to a point where we were sick of looking at each other. It's like, we even said, it's like, we play the same thing over and over and over again.
They always have the same strategies.
Yeah, it's the same strategies that we refined. It's like, God, we want to play somebody else. But it wasn't a popular game because that was the point when Magic popped, and then all the other competitors and whatnot came out.
Right, there's a card game for anything.
Yeah.
Any copyrighted name out there had a card game for it. So with card, I don't know, but just because I'm such a bigger fan of role-playing games and card games, partially for economy, I guess my kind of lighter reason here would be because I like the diversity of a role-playing game, the fact that it's not the same game, you can come at it in so many different ways. I lose interest in card games over time just because they're so stagnant. They're so static.
Static, yeah.
So I guess as a result, I just don't have nearly the number of opinions about card games that I have about role-playing games, which is one of the reasons why it's really never come up in the show before.
I've read several articles where people put forth the theory that CCGs were responsible for the decline of the role-playing game industry in the late 90s.
Well, if there had been products that people wanted to buy, it wouldn't have collapsed.
Yeah. They said that, what they were saying was basically it's like the gamer person's budget got cut in half.
Well,
the money was spending on CCGs.
If you think about it, you've got X amount of disposable income for this kind of stuff. I'm assuming you're not some kind of whacked addict who can't stop. But you've
know a couple of those.
But I mean, if you're a reasonable human being, you've got X amount of disposable income to spend on this stuff. And either you can spend it on many games or you can spend it on one card game.
Right.
And
that's what they were saying. They were saying that the rise of a lot of more expensive, more intricate video games cut into the gamer market, the CCG market, and then it's like all three of these things were cutting into each other.
I think also there's got to be a point where this would drive people possibly out of the hobby because, you know, they go out and they spend a huge amount of money on one product. There's going to some kind of burnout's going to follow.
Yeah.
Or pressure to stop spending money on these things.
I don't know. Do they still make Magic?
Yeah, they do.
I believe they do. Well, I guess we haven't hit that point yet.
I guess. But, well, you know what? I'll tell you, though, going to gaming cons, it used to be...
Well, yeah.
There came a point there in the late 90s, early 2000s, I don't remember where,
I remember using my feminine wiles to trade for cards. It was great.
You slut.
But we would go to our local gaming con that used to have tables upon tables of every role-playing game you could think of and many you couldn't think of. And it was just like the room was nothing but magic.
I remember standing in the line
of six guys playing Paranoia in the back, and everything else was magic.
I remember I was one of those guys at the Paranoia table. I remember at our con standing in this huge line that went halfway around the hotel, and we're in the middle of it, and we're like, oh, my God, we're going to be here for hours. And everyone around us, and we were there to sign up for a Paranoia game. Everyone around us in the line was shuffling Magic decks and organizing cards and doing this, that, and the other. And this lady came around, and she was like, Magic? Yes. Magic? Yeah, and she had a clipboard and a pen. Magic? Yes. Magic? And she got to us. She's like, Magic? And we're like, no. And she looked up, and she's like, come with me. Magic? No. Magic? No. Okay, you guys come with me. And she took us all the way to the head of the line, and we signed up, and we were on our way. Because everybody else was there for magic. That's all it was.
That was the year we got kind of passive aggressive. Little story here. That was the year we got kind of passive aggressive with Tim. There was a bunch of us that were in the hotel room, because this was back like in high school, maybe early college. It's like a whole bunch of us, like eight of us in a hotel room. I mean, you know how it goes at cons when you're in high school. And we were all like crashed on the floor and stuff. And Tim had this huge box of magic cards.
Yeah, he had about $3,000 worth of magic cards.
Huge.
Being a typical magic card player, these were all super organized.
Right.
And I can't even tell you how they were organized because I wasn't that into the game. But these were organized however a magic player would do it, down to the smallest possible detail. And he wasn't in the room at the time, so we took all of his cards out and started rearranging them by our perceived sexual orientation of them.
He got pissed
off.
And
he came back, and all the S&M cards were together. All the bestiality cards were together. All the homoerotic cards were together.
He got pissed off, and then he rearranged them. And then we, of course, being your typical snickering 15-year-olds,
right,
rearranged them again. And he didn't, like, he just grabbed the box and left and didn't know. And he started taking cards out, and he said that because of our arrangement, he pulled out the best deck he's ever put together.
The most powerful, gayest hand ever played in magic.
Wow, it's all elves and beastmen. What's up with this deck? It's working great for me, though.
Freddie Mercury?
Wow. How much do you have to tap to summon him?
It's not how much, it's a what. Anyway, before we lose our rating on this one. All right, so that's our thoughts on card games. We've had a couple people ask, and we've just never given them to date, and that's why. We enjoy role-playing games more. What would get me back into a card game is someone found a card game that was very, very fun to play, that you could play the game with many strategies and many experiences, not just the same damn game every time you throw down cards. And secondly, a game that you could get into and stay into on a limited budget, where you could go out and buy half a dozen decks and be set for life. I would get back into it.
There are some games like that, card games, where they have in the rules the addition of blank cards, that where you create the cards and you make the cards. There's a cheap-ass game called Fight City, I think it is. And there's two different ones that you can buy, and they're opposing decks. And the rules are written intentionally, almost outrageously vague. There are a whole bunch of blank cards. And the idea is that you fill in the rest of the rules however you want, and then you make up your own cards.
I guess that's maybe kind of the opposite extreme. I'm not looking, per se, for a game.
Well, that's a cheap-ass game for you.
Right. And by the way, for those of you who don't know, he's not, cheap-ass is not an adjective here.
That's there actually really called cheap-ass games.
There really is a company called
cheap-ass games.
And they
make some really great games,
their games
too.
Are great. I heard a story that the president of Cheap Ass Games, I don't know what his name is, when he goes to cons and stuff, he passes out a business card. His business card is a game you can play.
Really?
Yes. You can. I don't know how to play it. I've never seen one, but you can actually, he'll hand it to you and you actually play a little game with him as on the card.
Well, that is interesting, but I guess what I'm looking for personally is not a game to create myself. I love to create role-playing games. Yeah. I'm not that
you
into
want a
card games.
Product.
Yeah, I want a delivered product like Aliens vs. Predator. Neat game, different experience every time. On 6 decks, I'm set for life. No matter how many expansions come out, I don't have to buy anything else, and I'd go
That's
back to a card game.
That's the great thing about Aliens vs. Predator. They don't make it anymore.
Yeah, they don't make it anymore.
Star Wars, Decipher Star Wars, the same thing. Huge number of cards, but a limited number of cards.
Rolling on, I want to do, for our next topic, I want to follow up on something we talked about in the last podcast. In the last podcast, we talked about the difficulties and some of the dangers using a pop culture setting for a role-playing game, that you and your friends sit down, watch movie X, whatever that may be, and you're like, man, we just got to have a Blade Runner role-playing game, or whatever.
Oh, and calm down with your Blade Runner role-playing game. That, you gave me heart palpitations. It sounds like a wonderful idea.
I'm not going to re-bore you with a recap, because go back
There's
and listen to that episode.
There's nothing boring about a Blade Runner. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm still on this.
But as a related topic, I was thinking about this earlier. I want to talk about pop culture settings that in the mind of these hosts, okay, this is pure editorial, Well, it's the show is anyway, but this is especially...
Host?
No, it's like 99.9%.
My name really is Dan, and I introduced it. That's not...
Sky really is blue most of the time.
Things that we think need a role-playing game, a good, solid, well-supported role-playing game.
Concepts and genres that need role-playing.
Right. Yeah. And I'm sure there is an obscure fan version. I'm not talking about that.
Cheers the role-playing game.
No. I'm talking about the only thing to be worth reading that is the quotes by, was it Cliff or whatever?
Oh,
like.
Yeah.
But anyway, things that need a good, high-dollar, well-supported system. First one I'm going to give, because the math is almost completely consistent from one game to the next, and so I wish they just go ahead and make the role-playing game as Final Fantasy.
But the way we talked about this before is that it is the perfect setup for a product rollout.
Mm-hmm.
What you do is you have a main Final Fantasy like source book. You can, however you want to put it together, you can do a player's handbook and a DM's guide.
I mean, one player's handbook is all you need.
One is fine. One main book.
Just character creation, combat system, economy, generic stuff.
And it's generic. So you could play a generic Final Fantasy-esque role-playing game out of it. And then what you do is you'd release a monster manual. And the monster manual would have every single monster from every single game, and it would be organized by game.
Right, the ones that are even have a single monster manual is consistent. Yeah. Like
you wouldn't necessarily
the
do
in
the,
every game.
Yeah. You wouldn't necessarily do the red giant, the blue giant, the green giant. You just do giants,
right?
But then what you would do is that you can roll out campaign settings, source books for each game. Final Fantasy I, the source book. And it is an entire campaign setting, has all the characters in it, has the whole story, the backstory, has the land, the setting of the landscape and the cities and the maps and specialized monsters and enemies and stuff. And then it also could include expanded information too, things that was hinted at in the game or not gone into the game, and that just expands on that world. Then you do each one, Final Fantasy 1, 2, 3, 4, and so on. And each one would be a different campaign.
And it'd be real easy to do from the rules standpoint, because even though I know they're not exactly the same,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of consistency to the stats of the characters, to the way, to the archetypes of the characters. I mean, I realize 7 was kind of an exception, but overall, you know, you have
you have red mage,
white mage, red mage, blue mage. You have
fighter, ninja.
Yeah, you have your tanker.
Yeah,
or your I think the engineers are what they call them. You know, throughout the games, and so it's so popular.
Mm-hmm.
It begs for a role playing game where, like you said, you have one source book that's just character creation, combat system, whatever. Some supplements with a little bit on the settings. But one of the things I like about Final Fantasy is it's a different game every time they release it.
Yeah,
with the exception of X and X2. And so it's the type of thing that's meant to be this portable system mm-hmm. for whatever world you want to create. And in many ways, I would be more interested in creating a world for Final Fantasy than I would be for D&D. So if Square Enix is looking for anyone to make this game, that would be Dan at feartheboot.com.
We don't speak Japanese, you're going to have to translate.
Right. What else? You said Blade Runner. My fear with Blade Runner is where do you go with that?
Oh, where don't I go with it?
Isn't there already like a couple of generic cyberpunk games that already exist?
But I really wouldn't count.
Well, and the other thing is we're talking about, because I'm sure there is not a subject on the face of the earth I can throw out someone hasn't made a fan role-playing game for.
And
I could talk about the produce aisle in your grocery store.
Right.
Someone has made vegetables the role-playing game.
Yeah.
I'm talking about big, like major products. Works.
And the thing is, like with cyberpunk, Blade Runner, you could take the Steve Jackson cyberpunk rules or the GURP cyberpunk rules or even like Alternity and you can play a Blade Runner campaign. You can do that with anything. But, you know, like a Blade Runner game specifically, I don't know. I'm just a fan. That's all my thing is. There's not enough information to run a game, no, but I don't care.
You know, I'm glad you can at least admit that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you have the simulants or whatever running around, but it's like once they're all gone, you have exhausted the setting.
Yeah.
You'd have to invent more.
There are things that are hinted at it, but man, you'd have to do so much stretching and extrapolation and interpretation and just outright make things up
to make it work.
To make it work.
I can think of a couple of settings I wish existed. Actually, they might exist. I've never seen them.
Well,
you know?
Shoot. What?
Like Transformers, for example.
Don't get us started on Transformers.
I wrote one.
I know yes, you did. It was really fun.
It was wonderful.
Yep.
You have to, with a setting
well, actually,
like
if Hasbro wants us to publish, we have a Transformers role-playing game. If Hasbro would like to contact us about publication.
Because we know that people at Hasbro and WotC listen to Fear the Boot.
They hang off of our every word. They open every board meeting playing Fear the Boot.
When they put you on hold,
that's what you're hearing,
Fear the Boot.
That's right.
All right, so Transformers is one. What else, Don? Keep shooting.
Well, there's an anime universe that I really wish they would have gone into more detail with.
What is this, a big eye, small mouth, BISM?
They do a lot. I guess they do like
Hong Kong Action Theater.
Mm-hmm. They do anime type stuff, but there's an anime called Last Exile. It's a really, really interesting.
Last Exile would be wonderful.
Yeah, it has really interesting world and background and.
It's like Art Deco art style that they use, but there's like multiple factions and styles and
Interesting characters. Yeah. The world itself is an artificial world.
Yeah,
and you know it's like
don't give it away.
It's just really interesting. You know?
Yeah, it is. It's really cool.
Once you know about it, it's like, well, why didn't they explain the rest of it? There's so much more to know about
this.
You
can play. I mean, of course, it centers around just a couple of handful of people, but you can definitely play a game in it that has nothing to do with those people. And it would still be interesting. You would still have to expand on some things, but it would really be interesting. Unlike Blade Runner, where it's just like, it's nothing but skin jobs and hard-boiled dicks, you know. What else can you do? Hey, I like Blade Runner
I know,
a lot.
Well, anything else, John?
Oh, gosh.
There's the ubiquitous, not my favorite by any stretch of the imagination, the Robert Jordan Wheel of Time.
I think there is actually already a game out for that. I don't actually read Wheel of Time anymore.
Thank God.
Is Wheel of Time the one with, like, Krondor and Pug and all that?
Raymond Feist. He does those books.
That's pretty popular, too. Not my thing, obviously.
I've read a few of his books, but I'm not real familiar
Wheel of Time
with it.
Has, like, 10, maybe 11, 13-pound books. In the series.
They're actually about 5 pounds a piece, depending on whether you get the hardcover or the paperback.
Yeah, actually, kind of on that note, you know, was there ever a Dragon Riders of Pern role-playing game?
Riders of Pern.
I do believe there is one.
I did not like that book.
I haven't read it. I'd just be surprised if there isn't.
No, there is. I don't think there's an actual role-playing game.
There's
a bunch of like world books and stuff.
There's a Dragon Riders of Pern MUD that Tim played.
Yeah, there was. I played.
Like Anne McCaffrey's really crazy about her rights, as far as copyrights.
Really,
and,
she doesn't let it out at all.
No, she does. She doesn't.
That's why you've never seen.
I don't think she permits fanfic, but I know I've seen it before, so I think that you know.
Well, there are even with fanfics limitations to what she can stop. Yeah. So one of the things, and this is really off the cuff, I have not thought this through, so I may even cringe at me saying this later. I just
arena football, the role playing game.
No, because they had Blood Bowl, and that was actually pretty cool. But I haven't thought this through at all, so I may later decide this was a good idea or cringe at it, and I have kind of mixed feelings on the series as well.
What is it?
So, Earth Final Conflict.
Mm.
Is that the one with
the
Hercules?
Is that
the
Gene
Hercules?
Roddenberry series?
No, it's the Gene Roddenberry series. No to Chad, yes to Dawn.
It was the
Gene Roddenberry series where these aliens like showed up to Earth, and like it kind of almost in like an Arthur C. Clarke...
And it didn't have Kevin Sorbo in it?
No, it did not have Kevin Sorbo. Kind of like in a...
I think I'm... Maybe that's...
It was kind of like a Arthur C. Clarke...
You're thinking of Andromeda.
Yeah, I'm thinking of Andromeda.
It's kind of like an Arthur C. Clarke Childhood's End where these aliens show up and kind of fix society. But the main thing they were doing was they created this almost like fascist regime, and they were actually culturing humans because they needed to use them in a war because humans were better at fighting than they were. It was an interesting series. I can't say it was like my favorite series of all time. I actually only really even saw maybe about a third of it.
There needs to be a Firefly role-playing game.
Chat at feartheboot.com.
Hey, there's a lot of people who...
Leave the Joss-loving people alone.
There's a lot of people who play the Firefly role-playing game.
If you look at the similarities in terms of physics and feel between all of his series, honestly, somebody ought to make a Joss Whedon Megaverse. I'm serious. I would never play it, but
like a Marvel Megaverse or something?
Well, you think of it this way.
The Whedonverse?
Compare Buffy to River Tam. What's the difference outside of reason? You know, of course, somebody's going to write me all kinds of hate mail about this, but his stuff has such a kind of a similarity to it, such mm-hmm. a kind of consistent theme and feel, yeah. that you could create
you can tell
singular
your,
bunch of rules. That if you can make rules that handle what Buffy does, you can make rules that handle Irvin Tam.
And you
does.
Know what? I don't think that this is an insult to say it, that Josh Whedon has a certain style.
Right.
And there are a lot of similarities between the shows he does. He has that Joss Whedon sort of thing going on.
Right.
And you know what? Some people really like that. A lot of people really like that. Some people don't care for it.
But yeah, and I think I agree with you. I don't think we're being insulting to it
no,
at all.
Not at all.
I think some of the people that are really into his stuff would maybe take offense to the fact that I'm not picking up some kind of a nuance they feel is in there.
Yeah.
Because I love
like vampires versus spaceships.
Love his stuff or hate his stuff. Joss Whedon fans are probably some of the most dedicated, rabid fans on the face of the earth. Where I could
they're right up there with Bruce Campbell fans.
I mean, I could say anything about anything on the face of the earth and get a certain amount of feedback. Mm-hmm. If I went off on Joss Whedon, the amount of hate mail, the vitriol of the hate mail I would get.
The Josh Whedon community would rise.
His name is Joss, for God's sake. Stop
I said
it.
Joss.
He said Joss.
You said Josh. You keep saying Josh.
He's, no, well, he's Joss. I'm saying Joss. He's saying Joss. He's just pronouncing it lower.
Calm it down over there.
I think you've
there.
Had too much Bud Light. Well,
this is,
ew, don't even lie see, like that.
This is exactly what I'm talking about. You can't even get away with his name being a little.
I know.
Inflected.
Then the Josh Whedon fans like attack me.
The Joshua Whedon fans. All right, that's enough on that.
You guys are so mean. I don't see. There's nothing wrong with Buffy.
I never said there was anything
see,
wrong.
That's
with
just
Buffy.
It. Nobody ever said that.
I'm playing devil's advocate.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
No, you're playing devil's accurate. This is exactly what's played out in some of my feedback, is where it's like, yeah, this, that, and the other about Buffy. Purely neutral commentary. Yeah. What? How dare you? I'll kill you all 100 out of your...
It's no, like, we don't. Nobody has ever threatened to kill us yet.
But, I mean, the reaction I can get from people, it's like, I just say something in passing, and it's like...
So, what I think it is, really, is that it's fans. These fans really, really love their... whatever it is that they're a fan of.
Right.
You know, and they are willing to throw down and fight for it.
Yeah, I guess that's what I've never understood.
Are Star Trek fans like that these days?
You know, I guess that's what I've never understood, is I understand really liking something. We have things we really like.
You know, I have to say, Star Trek fans are really like that. And the reason why I heard on NPR, they interviewed this woman where she was a juror in the Whitewater case, and she wore a Star Trek uniform to jury duty, and when they asked her why she's wearing that, she's like, because Gene Roddenberry stood for certain values and principles, and I want to make sure that those are represented on this jury. And she said that to the press, and then they threw her out of the jury for talking to the press.
You know, I gotta wonder, though,
so,
was that the plan all along?
Well, man? Yeah.
But here's the thing. I understand really liking something. You know, there are things certainly in life I really like that I'm sure other people would not like for maybe very good reasons. I understand even liking something to the point you get to be kind of a fanboy or fangirl where you're blind to its downsides or you don't see it.
Like Blade Runner. Oh,
right.
Yeah.
But what I don't get is people that are so into something that they get hostile. And this is playing.
We're not saying that anybody who listens to the show has gotten hostile.
We call them Narutards.
But you know where you
nobody's
can,
gotten hostile with
where
us.
I can
yet,
say
but,
like
you know we've seen it
right. Where I could say you know well this or that TV show or movie. Well, I really don't like it, and I can give reasons why I don't like it. And someone will not just write me in and say you know I disagree with you. I really did like it. And here's why. I mean, they will get aggressive with me, angry with me. It's like, chill out. You know, everyone in life's got tastes.
Yeah.
And
no, if you're sitting there listening to this and thinking, they're talking about us. They're talking about me. No, we're not talking about you.
Well, yes, they are. They're lying.
Maybe that one person.
Maybe that one guy. Chaos. But sorry, inside joke in the forums.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Shut up or I'm going to give you a croissant.
All right.
Go on.
You know, usually our topic's lately been very advice-heavy and not real banter-heavy, and this show's been the complete reverse.
You know what? I blame it on that we did the bonus episode first.
So we came in all riled up.
Yeah, we came in all opinionated. Yeah. How far are we into this episode already?
Depends on edits, but we got enough time to cover something a little more organized. So let's talk about something that was brought up on our forums that I want to develop on the show.
Is it space combat?
No.
Please tell me it's not space combat space again.
You know, you guys have no taste. And here's why. After that space combat episode, Adam and Chad were all, this is boring. Adam's over there doing this little, like, chicken dance in his chair. Chad having ADD, can't help but look at him, so they're all distracted.
Hey, I was expressing myself.
They're off on their own little fantasy journey. And after the show's over, we got so much focused feedback, and everyone's like, oh, space combat's great, cool stuff, you should try this game, have you heard of this game?
Was boring, too.
No. You guys are just asshats that have no taste whatsoever. You are Nerutards.
Nerutards. We're terrestrial tards.
But something else is brought up on the forums, completely unrelated to space combat, that I want to talk about.
God. What is it?
Yeah. That's right. You couldn't handle the goodness. What was brought up was the use of electronic devices during gaming.
Yes.
Okay. We'll talk about this from two perspectives.
Very strong opinions.
GMs and players. Let's first talk about the game master bringing an electronic devices. Yeah. We're talking about laptops, projectors, That's really about it. I mean,
unless
you throw in PDAs and tablet PCs.
Yeah, unless somebody has like a holo table, they need to give me a call.
Yeah, give us
a price quote.
But assuming you don't have a holographic table or something, we're talking about, and let's start with the Game Master. Let's take a specific one. Game Master brings a laptop to the game to keep his or her documents on.
I mean, we're not talking brings the laptops, prints out the character sheets and charts, and hands them to people. We're sitting at the table. The game master opens up the laptop and has the books, and they're referencing the laptop.
Right. I personally, as long as, I put it like the books.
Yeah.
As long as you are not so distractingly engrossed in your laptop that the game slows down, I don't have a problem with it. Mm-hmm. In fact, I mean, have used laptops before just because they allow me to do things like instantaneous calculations.
Yeah.
Like, we were running a game, homegrown game, and they had a spaceship, and they had to do like a maintenance economy on it. It's the type of thing that on paper would have just taken 45 minutes, calculator. Well, there I could just punch in a number and it just say, okay, this is what happened. It also let me do things like, you know, I had the plot on there because at the time I don't think I even owned a printer. But I guess like books, you can get so engrossed or distracted by it or so busy alt-tabbing, just like you can be so busy flipping pages that it screws things up.
My general rule of thumb is that it doesn't matter if it's a laptop, a book, or a piece of paper, or your notebook. As a GM, if it takes more than a minute to flip through and find something, you don't need it. Because you have to keep the story going. You have to keep,
you have to keep the
players engaged. And and you have a flow. And if, like, you're in the middle and the dragon's coming down and the players are like, we will not fight the dragon. We're going to try and negotiate and save the town because we can't beat it. And the dragon's like, what do you want? And I want revenge. And the GM's like, hold on a second, guys. Flip, flip, flip. Click, click, click. Oh, I've got mail. Click, oh, so-and-so says hi. They just IM'd me. Blah, blah, blah. You know, if it takes more than a minute to look that stuff up or to do it, like I said, it doesn't even have to be a laptop. Could be a notebook. Could be a game book. Could be your personal notes for the game. You've totally interrupted the
honestly,
flow.
It's my observation from GMing for a long time that a minute's too long.
Yeah.
If you cannot find your information within about 15 seconds, you've probably lost your players.
I gave it a very liberal minute, and I was thinking of like a combat situation, and you're going through a poorly organized book like Shadowrun First Edition and looking for a chart or something.
Because the few times I've had a pause that long, and my players may come back from it, but it's like, Mike's in the kitchen, so-and-so's down the hall, Tim's on the phone with his wife, and it's like, I gotta herd everyone back and settle. It's
okay, where were we? Well, the dragon was being real dramatic,
right. It's like
guys.
Bringing the kids back in from recess. No one's in character anymore, everyone's completely lost, doesn't know what they were doing, distracted by this, that, and the other. Somebody found muffins in the kitchen, and they're asking if they can have
one. Oh my god, we got muffins?
No, we do not have muffins in the kitchen.
Don't tease me like that.
So I think laptop, I'd put it in the same category as a...
I think that it's a good thing. It's a good thing.
They do
thing
things
have,
that tape paper but, doesn't do.
Yeah.
Like I said, quick calculations, quick references.
But you let me tell you, call everything up on the screen beforehand.
Yeah. All right.
And another tip that I want to give, too, and some people may have this, some people may not. I have a very high-end laptop that I got for gaming, and the thing puts out a hell of a lot of heat and has a lot of heating vents and stuff. Well, if you're on a really close table, and I put my laptop facing to the left, and there's a person on my left, I am blasting hot air on this person's arm. And so you've got this player who's trying to get into character, and he's got this big sweaty patch on his arm. It's little things like that. Like again, my laptop, lots of fans, very noisy. So if you're doing this Cthulhu, and you're going through in the dungeon, and then there's like yeah, there's this... Or it gets a little hot, my laptop spins up, and I'm like... You know, things like that. You turn off all the sound, so if you get an IM, it doesn't go now, right in the middle of a
scene.
Let's
talk about, still from a Game Master's perspective, what about more sophisticated setups? There was a link somebody posted on our forum to a guy who had made this like interactive projector.
Yes. For,
like using a CAD program and I guess some kind of an over, like a...
Yeah, like an overhead projector. If you hadn't seen it, imagine the pictures were like, looked like they were in this guy's basement. Something, a table the size of a ping pong table, had a huge white board on it. Completely clean, nothing drawn on it, and suspended from the ceiling, he had an overhead projector. Apparently, this guy was fairly proficient in CAD programming or design or something like that, and he had his computer hooked up to it, and he had it, and this was for, like, dungeon crawls, specifically, like, D&D. I clear this room, I check for traps, I check the door for traps, I go to the next room and kill the orcs and clear the room and check for traps, and, you know, that sort of adventure. And anyway, he would design the layout of this whole dungeon on his computer. He would project it down on this whiteboard that was non-movable whiteboard, and the entire thing would be black. And as the players who had physical models, like lead miniatures, they would put themselves in the room projected on the table. As they moved through, he had different templates on his computer, size diagrams, I guess, for the diameter of their torchlight. And it would, like, light up as they went through, and as they explored the dungeon, the sort of fog of war would disappear. And it looked really cool. Not my kind of game, but it looked really cool.
Cool stuff. I think two downsides. First obvious one is money.
Oh, yeah.
It takes a lot, well, money and technical know-how that it takes to set this up.
And room. God.
Well, yeah. So problems of economy. The second thing would be, I think there's a danger of infatuation. And what I mean is that
novelty.
If you put something like that up, you're going to want to use it. Mm-hmm. And pretty soon, you run the danger that your whole game is going to center around this piece of technology and the experiences it brings. And like if someone came to me today and said, here's this great setup you can use for your future D&D games, sure, over the course of campaign, they might go into a dungeon here or there. But... Mm-hmm. That's not what my games are about. And when I hit this point where it's like, you know, I've got this huge setup, I'm going to want to keep using it.
I got the impression that these guys, that was their thing.
I mean, I guess
they
that's the thing. Maybe if that's all you do to begin with, might as well. One of the things I've thought about doing, because we play a fair amount of Battletech, is to, there are programs out there where you can pull them up on a laptop and set up a map combat.
Yeah. And you like a four rule, not a video game arcade
shooter.
Yeah, not a video game. Yeah.
Like, it's like just like you get a chess game, this is a Battletech game, where you move your mechs around and you lock on and shoot guys and it rolls the dice for you and tells you the results. And Battletech map combat is...
Mega Mech. SourceForge.com, check, or org, or whatever it is.
.net, I think.
SourceForge.net, and the program's called Mega Mech.
This is spelled M-E-K-K, M-E-G-A, M-E-K-K, something like that. You know, the few times I have ever brought up using something like that, and I've always thought it as a good thing because Battletech mech combat's very paper intensive, very slow. I mean, this would take a 4-hour combat plus 2 hours of paperwork down to like 30 minutes.
Yeah.
But I've had a lot of resistance from my players to this because they so much like the feel of the map with mechs they can move around.
Not from Adam and me. We've been playing around with Mega Mech.
Really?
And we have been wanting to use it.
I don't know. I actually really kind of like the tactile part of the game.
My problem with Mega Mech, though, is that I can set up on my table a map and miniatures, and I can just glance over the whole thing, and I can get sort of in my mind an overview of the tactile display. You can't do that in Mega Mech.
You have to scroll around.
You have to scroll around and see it. And that, to me, that's the deal breaker.
Really?
Yes. I want to be able to see the whole, even if it's just a top-down thing, I want to see the whole thing and I want to see it big. And I don't want to see it in just some corner.
Hmm.
Yeah. And if you go to SourceForge and check out Mega Mech, I'm not trying to promote the thing here. Obviously, I'm not. I don't use it. You can see, they'll have screenshots and you can see what we mean.
I'm going to have to look at this. I've actually never looked at this.
It might have changed. We only looked at it a couple years ago. They might have improved it since.
Well, yeah. I mean, if it's actively supported and it's not just abandonware, then maybe it's a whole lot better than it was.
Yeah.
Well, if that's the case, in the next BattleTech game we run, we should do that because, it, like I said, it turns map combat now into something you can do in very short order.
You know what? In fact, we should set up that. And sorry to get into our personal lives here on the podcast, but I will bring this to a point, is that we should do this. We should do just a map combat on Mega Mech and then report back and see
how it went. I think the biggest problem we'd have is how do you huddle that many people around a laptop?
I think it's networkable. Everybody gets their own laptop.
Oh, does it? Well, even better is if you could just rig it up to a TV or if you have, unfortunately, like a grand to buy, but if you had a projector for a laptop.
You can do the whole thing. You can do individual people hooking up to a LAN and you can do double blind games.
That's cool.
That might be fun.
Yeah. And if you don't know, a double blind game is I'm fighting Dan. He's on one side of a mountain. I'm on the other side.
We don't see each other's
mouse. Yeah, I don't see him. I can't see him until he comes
around.
Yeah,
that being the case, I think next BattleTech game we play, we will have to try this thing out.
Sounds intriguing, doesn't it?
Yeah, because this would greatly speed up map combat and also greatly reduce the amount of things I have to lug around. Go down to a five-pound laptop.
I think there are disadvantages to it. There is something to be said for rolling the dice and moving the little mechs and sitting around a table, and then, you know, sitting around that table, and it's that critical roll, and the dice are bouncing,
watch them
and then
tumble, and
no!
You fall on your head again!
Again!
Yeah, I saw that, Phil.
Ooh, stick.
All right, let's move on real quick to the second angle of talking about these, which is player devices, where players come to the game and they have a laptop that has their character sheet, their spell list, the map of their hometown.
Nope.
I say big time no, but Chad, what are your reasons?
Oh, hell no. Because I'm sitting there and every role-playing game has a point when a player isn't the center of action. Because you can have the whole party doing something, but occasionally you have to focus on one player, two players, and some players just sit there. And then they have a laptop in front of them. And they start playing WoW, or IMing, or playing The Sims, or surfing the web, or doing...
Right, because they're bored.
And you know why I can say this? Because I would do that. If I were a player, and I had a laptop, I would do that. And
what about things like cell phones, like Adam playing
hell
Snake?
No. Nope. Flat out, put it away.
I'm
turn the
you.
Ringer
it's
off.
Too much distraction.
Yep.
And I think it's too much distraction for too little benefit. Players typically, I mean, I realize in some campaigns, players may need a lot of information. You may have a castle with a staff, or you may have some kind of inventory or quartermaster thing going on you've got to keep track of, or what. I'm not completely unsympathetic to this fact, but having said that, I think with most players that the distraction outweighs the benefit they get from a laptop. I think also it kind of breaks down the social interaction because everyone is now peeking over a screen instead of clear view, open table, papers. And I think also I'm not sure a player would need the laptop simply because a game master needs a huge amount of information and a huge amount of secret information.
Yeah.
Players don't. Mm-hmm. You know, players come to this table with a limited amount of public information. So why risk the distraction? Why obscure the view of the other players, break down some of the social interaction, on and on, all these problems, struggling to try and find some place to plug these in, massive amounts of heat, because now in addition to five gamers, you've got five gaming laptops.
All these whirling fans making noise.
It's just,
IMs
I can't
beeping.
See a benefit to it.
Yeah.
That's worth the cost and risk.
You know what? If you're going to have a group of people sit down and everybody's got a laptop and everybody wants to game, well, what you do is you slap down a router in the middle of that. And then you start LANing.
Yeah, you install StarCraft.
Yes.
Not Dungeons and Dragons.
Yes. Exactly. You start playing Half-Life or CS or whatever your flavor of the week is. And you start playing that. Because that is what's going to end up doing anyway. So, and that's my take on it. I don't know. I think that it's just too much distraction. Now, on another note, too, like cell phones and stuff, not just sitting there playing Snake or checking your right. mail or whatever. I'm talking like the cell phone's there, you're not touching it, and it rings. I hate that. And I'm not an anti-cell phone person, but it's just like, again, the dragon's coming down and we're going to negotiate and we're going to go to end. It's like, ring. And it's like, ugh.
Yeah.
And, oh, and then the person's like, oh, go on without me. Go on without me. Yeah, baby. Yeah, what's up? It's like, no.
First of all, we can't go on without you. You're critical to the plot. Secondly, even if we could, you're talking to your freaking girlfriend right here.
Which brings up another point, Dan. Tell us about woman breaks.
Okay.
We didn't have this in my group,
we had the problem Chad's describing. I won't mention Tim's name, but one person in particular, his phone used to ring every 20 freaking minutes. And it got to the point that...
Oh, and it was just one person calling.
Yeah.
We won't mention Teresa's name.
Right. But it just got to the point we couldn't game.
Yeah.
Because critical moments were interrupted, and even if he wasn't in there, he's still wandering around talking on a cell phone, which is really distracting.
Mm-hmm.
And so we instituted a new rule, which was this, because several of us, you know, we had things going on. We needed to talk to people, want to talk to people. So we implemented what we called woman breaks. And what a woman break was throughout the course of the night, we would set aside one, two, maybe three, depending on the length of the session, breaks, where everyone would stop and we'd go cook our Totino's pizzas, go to the bathroom, grab another Pepsi, whatever we were doing. But also you would take that opportunity to go to the four corners of the house or apartment, hop on your cell phones.
Hey, baby.
Yeah.
I'll get that milk. No problem.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Check in with your girlfriend, check in with your family, check in with whoever it is that's bothering you today, and do these in controlled spurts so the game itself went uninterrupted.
Oh, and you know what the perfect solution to that is? You don't ever have to have a woman break. Marry the person you're gaming with. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's so good.
I wouldn't call you anyway.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, that's why we have a great relationship. Yeah,
here's the thing. You guys have a unique situation for two reasons. One, you are both gamers.
Yes.
There are a lot of folks in a relationship where both parties are not gamers.
You suckers.
Secondly, you guys have a very, very low communication relationship.
Pretty much.
And
I know everything I need to know when he leaves the house.
Even people who are, I mean, I realize there's some people on the high end of that where it's this complete codependency and you can't get the, but even people kind of somewhere in that middle thing are going to get the calls every so often.
Right.
I mean, not every 5 minutes every game, but it's going to happen. Mm. And so we just kind of try and keep that on the lowdown and keep that in a controlled situation.
Yeah.
And the current incarnation of the group, it's really not necessary because... the relationships are stable enough that we don't have that many phone calls.
Right.
And
do you think it's worse if between, and this is a total tangent, between husbands and wives or boyfriends and girlfriends?
I think it's a lot worse between boyfriends and girlfriends because when you're in that early stage of the relationship, even if ultimately you're going to be...
Oh, fear the dating advice.
Yeah, well, I think even ultimately if you're going to be in, you know, you're going to have a little bit more separation between yourselves.
Right.
During that early part where you're in love or you're kind of uncertain of how things are working, you want to keep talking to the person. And once you get more stable in a marriage, that goes down. I mean, I know there's exceptions. There's people, even they're married, can't get enough of each other. They're so codependent, they can't get away from each other, whatever the case is. But in my experience, argument from anecdote purely here, it is always far worse amongst dating people than it is amongst married people.
Interesting.
Cool. Yeah.
Well, I think that's about it then for devices while gaming.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we'll call it there, and we will catch you guys next time.
All right.
Awesome.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot. This show is copyright 2006, fully owned by its host. The games, movies, and other properties mentioned in this show are the property of their respective owners. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor, as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.